The Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
I'm taking it away. I don't know where.
Take it away.
Well, we could go taking it out on the road. Hey, I've been trying to figure out who the other actor was in Easy Rider other than Peter Fonda, whose birthday it is today.
Happy birthday, Peter.
And Jack Nicholson.
Whose birthday is on my birthday.
Oh, there you go. All right. This is good. Who was the other actor of the three?
I don't know. Want me to Google it?
No, I figured it out, though. But I was sitting here talking to my friend on the porch this morning, and we were trying to figure out who Peter and Jane Fonda's father's name was. We couldn't remember.
Okay.
Now, there's many, you know, it's not like I can't remember my name, but that was weird, and I'm like, oh, and then we finally got Henry Fonda.
Right.
But then I couldn't remember who the third actor was, and I really liked him because he's done other things. Of course, he's passed away a couple years ago.
Yeah.
It was Dennis Hopper.
All right.
See? So I'm feeling like, okay, take it away to Easy Rider.
Gotcha.
Oh, yeah, that's my off-the-cuff, has no non-sequitur to anything we're talking about.
Of course. Fine.
Okay.
Fine. Yeah, it's our first live show in a few weeks. So I'm like, what are we doing? What is this thing?
Well, I mean, we can also look at all the things that have happened since then, why we weren't on the show on the air live.
It's been a busy couple of weeks.
Yes, it has.
The show, yeah.
But it's actually been, I think, for you, the busier.
A little bit.
Yes.
A little bit. I had a jam-packed first quarter.
Yes, you did.
Schedule-wise, and and then it's pretty jam-packed still until about June, July.
When I go away, see, there you go. We don't, the first half of the year, then she gets about a couple of week period where I'm gone and she's fine, and then we go back to the hysteria.
Yeah, I got to try and slow my roll for the second half of the year. I'm doing the Women's Herbal Symposium in the fall.
Uh-huh.
Again, and teaching some workshops there, but that is the only thing I'm committed to in the second half of the year.
Yet.
Well, yeah, but I'm going to try and slow my roll. I mean, we'll probably do the Tea and Tarot thing again
in
October, and I'm assuming the Mystic Fair is going to happen
in October.
Oh, actually, I just lied. Hexen Fest happens at the end of September, and I agreed to help with that event.
See, I do know my partner here.
Yes! What am I doing? Why do I say yes to all of these things?
Well, you know there's a saying here about say yes to life. Well, you're definitely playing that role out totally, dear.
Yeah.
I, on the other hand, say maybe.
Say maybe to life. Think about it for a minute.
Yes, well, I mean, there are things I will say yes to, but there's a lot of the maybe how I am flowing.
Yeah. But that is wise.
Maybe that's because I'm older and I got there by crashing and burning for a while.
I should learn from your mistakes. Is that what you're saying?
Nah. I want you to do, you know, what is it like, you know, learn from my mistakes? No, go make your own mistakes.
Yeah, I think.
But anyway, so I will say our standard question is, so how was your week? I should say, how was your couple of weeks? And now you can say what you've done for the couple of weeks.
Well, I have to remember all the things. I had a little sojourn to the East Coast, and I taught I don't remember. Have I talked about this on the show?
No, you have not.
Okay. I did a weekend workshop in Pittsburgh with my dear, beloved friend, Amaret, who's a reclaiming witch out in Pittsburgh. We taught the Pearl Pentacle using Baba Yaga as our goddess. And we had such a wonderful experience that on the Sunday before I came home, we went and got matching tattoos of the chicken-footed hut.
I'm not going to ask her to show me.
Oh, I'll show you after the show.
After the show. Okay.
My leg, it's super cute.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then, I don't know, more things of busy. And then PantheaCon was last weekend.
Yes.
And we, Milk and Honey, vended.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a priestess in the reclaiming ritual. And then I organized a Dionysus ritual
mm-hmm.
on Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
And both rituals were lovely, but I have to say the Dionysus so good.
Awesome.
It was so
awesome.
Good. I'm still, like, smiling about it and high from it and feel like, you know, this deity came into my life and made himself really well known, and I've talked about my relationship
mm-hmm.
with him before on the show, and he told me after California Witch Camp last year that he wanted me to do a ritual for him, and I was like, okay. And then, you know, timing, and I do goddess workshops. I don't tend to do god workshops.
Right.
So I put a proposal in for PantheaCon. I actually put in 4 proposals for different rituals.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dionysus one was the only one they took. So I felt like he made that happen. He wanted this ritual.
Right.
That he is the reason it got approved. Right.
Right.
And I roped in a few beloveds from different traditions that I knew would be amazing and
uh-huh.
trusted.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't give any of them very much to go on, which for some of my beloveds who are in more traditional witchcraft traditions,
uh-huh.
that was pushing some edges. They were like, We don't know what we're supposed to say. I'm like, yeah, you'll figure it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was so good. He was there
mm-hmm.
before the ritual even began.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing, and it was wild, and people drank wine, and there people were making out, and it was awesome.
Oh, wow.
So really, there's been so much going on. I've been super busy, highs and lows, but that is the thing that mm-hmm. I most want to share is that it was so good.
Oh. Yay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know that, you know, you were gone and you had your you know, situation you were vending, and
yeah.
I know that that is a big coup to be in the vendor room.
Yeah, and it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of work, but it was
mm-hmm.
a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always know you're going to do your rituals and your presentations well. You're very good at that.
Thank you.
Very, well, I've sat in on a couple, so obviously
yeah.
I put my stamp of approval.
Nice. Thanks.
But yeah, you're welcome. But I'm glad that you had fun.
Yeah, it was a good time. It was a good PantheaCon, and we're gonna try and vend again next year. It's
mm-hmm.
every year is a lottery, so you don't know if you'll get in or not.
Right.
But we'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was worth it, and it was
mm-hmm.
a new perspective, and
mm-hmm.
hopefully good for the shop. You
right.
know, which is really what. The you vend at something like that because you want people to know your shop exists.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So that was good.
Yeah, and there's some drama in the pagan community that I'm not going to talk about, but I had to, I had some people, I don't know, how do I phrase this? I had some people talking behind my back because I wasn't making a public statement.
You weren't coming out for or again.
Right. And so people were asking other people, what does Phoenix think about this? What is Phoenix going to do about this? Blah, 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 Phoenix. And at some point I was like, you know what? If tell people that keep coming to you, because it was 2 specific people
uh-huh.
who kept saying, hey, if people want to know my opinion, they can fucking call me.
There you go.
They can send me a message on Facebook. If they don't have my phone number, because we're not that close, send me an email. I'm
uh-huh.
happy to answer questions.
Uh-huh.
Don't go asking other people what my opinion is.
Right.
So that was annoying because it's a fresh wound for the pagan community
mm-hmm.
right now, the local pagan community.
Right, right.
And so that came up over and over again at PantheaCon.
Right.
A lot of the people involved were there.
Yeah.
You know, so that's,
yeah.
that's good because community needs to process, and
mm-hmm.
it was hard. And,
yeah,
you know,
especially
well.
When you're trying to go, well, even if I have a personal feeling here,
yeah.
We're business people. We're professionals in this environment. We're not just, you know, love and light and hanging out and playing and
yeah.
skipping through the light. Fantastic.
Right.
Because, you know, you're a store owner. You've got a persona that is grounded in that professionalism.
Right.
So,
right. Right. Exactly.
So.
Been there, done that.
Oh, me. Well, let's see. Other than skirting the flu and getting a little bit of the cold and kind of getting through that, it's just been work. But, you know, I've noticed that clients and situations around clients, Phoenix and I kind of briefly talked, because it was only briefly, about, you know, some of the things we've been experiencing in our other parts of our life. And it's just been very, very intense, emotional, but with things are slow when it comes to working in the spirit realm with regards to clients or with regards to the clients themselves getting through whatever it is.
Right.
So some of it has been kind of a difficult little bit of, you know, hurdle jumping. And basically, you know, just putting myself back together, you know, after coming back from Arkansas and things that are going around in my life and that, it's been really hard getting reintroduced here and then what it is I'm looking at and what I want to do. And I just, it's been a... Because it's cold, and I just want to get bundled up and watch a bunch of shows.
Really cold.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know I'm like the prissy Northern California girl, but it's been really cold. Like Arctic wind blast when you walk outside because the wind is so chilly.
It's coming. Actually,
it's
30
degrees.
Yeah, it's coming through the Arctic Circle coming down, and the way that the pressure zone is, instead of taking it out to sea a little bit, it's pushing it into us.
Yeah, I don't like it.
And I'm like, well, this is sort of, you know, it's to me, even though we're not getting rain or any of that, I just, you know, I want to bundle up and just chill out.
Right.
No pun intended.
Yeah, that's my goal this weekend is to... My friend's 70th birthday party is on Saturday in San Francisco, so we're going to do some partying to celebrate my beloved Rose May Dance. And besides that, I am doing nothing but watching Netflix. I found a new show on Amazon I like. I'm going to veg out and pretend the world doesn't exist because I'm tired.
That's pretty much it. I mean, that's pretty the way things are going, and I've been... You know, I'm cooking. There's something I'm cooking on, and I'll mention it here just to basically mean I put it out in the world. I've been working on trying to find a way to get a book written that has impact and has meaning.
Yeah.
And I found that what I do and how I do it is maybe what's going to be the basis of it, but the overlay is going to be about the labyrinth, but not a how-to labyrinth.
Yeah, nice.
So, and it's weird.
A metaphorical labyrinth?
Yes,
nice.
Yes. And it's very interesting because the universe is actually helping by throwing things at me as I drive down the road.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and it wasn't intended. It was just I started, you know, and then it starts happening. So... That's what I'm looking at. Hopefully the flow will come. I know it's going to be something that is going to challenge me because it's going to be putting some things about who I am and, you know, some of me out there in the world.
Right. Well, and, you know, I mean, forcing you to sit down and put all those things on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
It's hard work.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
that's exciting.
So that's sort of the beginning stages of what the first quarter has been, I guess, steaming and cooking and brewing. And at that, we should discuss what our topic is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Hey, by golly, we're going to be talking about a goddess tonight.
Which goddess?
Oh, gosh. It's been a while now. Hang on a minute. Let me think. Okay, she's Egyptian.
Yep.
Hathor.
Ooh, I like her.
Yes. And as we know, this is one of those where our world, as it changed for the commitments, kept changing what we were doing.
Yeah.
So
we have reorganized our show schedule
a few times
in the last month.
So that being said, let's think of talking about Hathor.
Talking about Hathor.
Yes, and one of the things I noticed was Hathor A-T-H-Y-R is one of the spellings that came up, which, of course, I kind of look at that and I go, okay, Hathor, you know.
Mm.
But she's one of the prime deities of Western civilization, and she's been worshipped for more than a millennium.
Yeah.
Longer than Christianity.
Yeah, longer than the written word.
Yes.
Yeah. It's, and, you know, we say that as if it's, we can know for sure. Obviously, we can't because we don't know anything that happened before the written word.
That's
but
true.
It is believed that Hathor is one of the most ancient goddesses ever.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously in Egypt, and she's often depicted with horns like a cow.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this belief that this ancient sort of fertility goddess connected to cattle and cows then went through these stages of evolution to become the Hathor that we are connected to and aware of now in, in modern civilization.
Right, right.
Which is pretty fascinating.
You know, we've got, oh, my goodness, it's like she's got so many different permeations.
Yeah.
Goddess of underworld, ruler of the sky. You know, we've got both the above and below. And,
right.
You know, patron of foreigners, mother of the Egyptians. I mean,
yeah. And the thing that I always have to name whenever we talk about an ancient goddess is that we there's several layers of things happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we tend to syncretize goddesses and be like, all of this is Hathor.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do that now, right? But the reality is, back in the day when Hathor was being worshipped in Egypt, thousands of years ago, she would have been different regionally. And
exactly.
She might not even, like we say she, but back then, there may have only been one Hathor, and then these other goddesses who had a similar vibe to this one Hathor. And over time, now we think of the gods of Egypt. But that's not how it was. There was the god of this city and this town and this village.
Right.
And they may have all had a flavor of Hathor, but they weren't all the same goddess. And now we say, oh, well, they're all the
and
same
she
goddess.
And that gives the reason why you have so many things she
yes.
is ruling yes. over.
Yes, and the thing, too, about Egyptian worship is you have to understand ancient Egyptian spirituality and ancient Egyptian soul, and it's not the way we think about it in the West.
Mm-hmm.
It's much different, and it's, you know, the Hindu system is its own complicated thing, and the Western system is its more simple thing, and Egyptians is kind of in the middle somewhere, where the gods are like emanations of more than one, but then they go back to this source at the same time, and yet they don't.
Mm-hmm.
So it's contradictory, and yet it feels contradictory for my brain as a Westerner. But for the ancient Egyptians, it wasn't contradictory. It was complementary, and they fed each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to fully grasp how she would have been worshipped back in the day because it doesn't look like anything we do now.
Because the Western, specifically,
yeah.
the Western mind wants linear.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's the theme I'm going to harp on tonight,
yeah.
is that it isn't linear. And yes, when we've started the way that more modern witchcraft and pagan and Wicca all work and do it in the Dionysiac, and we do circles and we do, you know, all that, that's because we see that same process of emanations, a source, but emanations, and it all has diversity because we're looking at it as this circle rather than a straight line.
Right. Right.
And because we are products of the straight line, that makes it, we have to have, well, we follow it that she does this and this and this and this and this.
Right.
So, and we've said over the different times we've talked about different deities, about even the Greek deities, they have different towns, have different ways they saw this energy, and it then began as they began to collect into that one, you know, like we're going to centralize government, we're going to centralize religion.
Yeah.
That's how they began to do it.
Yeah. And the Greeks and the Romans had a big influence on that because they would move into other lands and say, oh, that god sounds like this god, so we're just going to say that they're both of those names, right?
Right?
Like the the Greeks looked at Hathor as Aphrodite.
Right.
Right. And the Romans looked at Hathor as Venus.
Right.
And there is some... there is some ways that that makes sense, but at least in my very humble opinion, Hathor is much more complicated
mm-hmm.
than Aphrodite or Venus might
mm-hmm.
be.
Mm-hmm.
She's got stories that connect her to a wider range of
mm-hmm.
rules and rulership.
Right.
Right? So, but there is that, you know, sort of the things we associate with Aphrodite, like that sex pot and
right.
booty.
Pleasure.
Yeah, and that's
you know.
Very much... especially modern Hathor,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind
mm-hmm.
of how we think of her more now.
Now.
Because of the Greek and Roman influence.
Right. And, you know, as we are looking at her and we're going, well, just like I said, you have the goddess of the underworld and the goddess of the sky.
Right.
Those are just, that kind of takes in the areas in its broadest sense,
yeah.
because, you know, a sex goddess isn't going to be the underworld, really.
Okay.
I mean, all considering, because there's the other parts of the underworld of transitions and things like that. But it's fascinating to have started doing the research and going, oh, wow, look at this and look at that. And my brain wants to make it all nice and tidy.
Yeah.
But it really isn't.
Right.
So, with that, let's see what else we can come up with to give people a flavor. There's the appearance of the seven Hathors.
Right. I'd forgotten about that.
Yes. So, that's kind of...
I wonder if I have that in my notes.
Well, it's basically, it appears as seven or sometimes nine. Of course, they have to... it's materialized. Basically, the seven modalities with the seven... spheres, the heavenly spheres. So I think what you're getting is for giving each Egyptian seven souls at birth.
Right.
And so she became, because of how this whole deity became part of these things, she became sevenfold. And then, which I found interesting, it kind of flashed forward, is how you have the medieval myth of the fairy godmothers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know.
Right, they would show up
yeah.
at birth.
At birth.
And give
these
specific blessings.
Right.
Right, which I have also the five gifts of Hathor.
Uh-huh, and they...
well, yeah, which are bestowed upon the child at birth, and they are related to by each finger on the left hand being connected to a blessing.
Ah, the left hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
And then, you know, because the poor in Egypt were very poor. Often,
right.
You know, there were slaves in Egypt who were laborers. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, as far as slavery goes, this is to say, the slaves in Egypt were treated pretty well. Like, they were fed and they lived and could choose their own partners and all that kind of thing, but
mm-hmm.
they were still slaves and laborers.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But... this was something that everyone did, to put their five gifts or the five things they were grateful for into each finger.
Mm-hmm.
And that way,
mm-hmm.
no matter what, they would always be able to look at their hands and know what their blessings were.
Now, that's fascinating. And
yeah.
there isn't, later on, now obviously this jumps out of this particular deity, but then that also, down the road, talks about the hand of power.
Mm.
Which is
right.
another version in hoodoo and other traditions, but it's the hand of, well, I'm going to use this in one sense, the hand of God.
Right.
But it would be actually the hand of goddess.
Right, right. Well, and who knows, you know, we have all kinds of weird modern ideas about left-handedness. And,
I know.
And that's changed recently, but who knows what the Egyptians thought about left-handedness. It might have been
the
normal or a blessing or...
Uh-huh.
Nobody cared. Who knows?
Well, since we don't necessarily, and even if we were lucky, and I say that in a humorous way, to, you know, like do time travel or, you know, channel in or whatever we're going to talk about, that process, we're filtering it through a modern brain and a modern
right.
society.
Right.
So, I mean, I have to give a lot of leeway when I look at these things as to, well, yeah, this is what I see it as, and I will relate to it. I can, you know, see a broader picture, but that doesn't necessarily always mean I get it.
Right.
So, but, and she was definitely worshipped in Israel in the 11th century. and the holy city of Hazor was part of the Old Testament, claims Joshua destroyed it. That was the Egyptian mines there in Sinai. That's why the Israelites were there. So there is a lot of worship of her at that time, was identified as the Lady of Byblos or Astarte. So even even the crossover to other belief systems.
Right. I'm very curious, and I don't know how much scholarship is out there about this, but just these ancient goddesses, mm-hmm. you know, the Egyptian goddesses, the Sumerian goddesses, the goddesses that were born in what is now Iran and Iraq,
mm-hmm.
Sumeria, you know, these, how much crossover happened there?
Mm-hmm.
No, because trade would have been happening from the Mediterranean and the Middle East and mm-hmm. Egypt. There had to have been some crossover. And there are gods like Hathor and Astarte, like you just said, and Dionysus,
mm-hmm.
who came from other lands
mm-hmm.
and were often darker skinned or bronze or, you know, what have you.
Right.
I'm very curious about all of that. It would be interesting mm-hmm. to dig into some of that history, like Ishtar and Astarte, and even the early Jewish gods, the Judaic,
mm-hmm.
is that the right word?
Mm-hmm.
The goddesses of that tradition, because there are a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try and think that there's no goddesses in the Judeo-Christian faith, because there are. They're just
different. They're called different.
Yeah, well, and they've been set aside for
of
the
course.
Most part. But no doubt, Asherah is related to Astarte in some
mm-hmm.
way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
fascinating. And
mm-hmm.
Egypt was a huge powerhouse of culture and power and mm-hmm. money and status for thousands of years.
Right.
You know, so how much is completely lost? How much?
Yeah.
How much came from what is now Iran and Iraq? You know, it's just...
Right.
Oh, I need a time travel machine. I need Doctor Who.
Now, you see, that's our modern version of, mm-hmm. you know, the time machine of H.G. Wells. But
I don't necessarily want to live there. It sounds like hot and a lot of work and not, you know, indoor plumbing. So I'm okay to not live there, but I would like to check it out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, isn't that how we'd like to do different places? Like, how many of us would love to go back to when, you know, there was the Stonehenge and some of the things that were being put together? Or but who wants to live during that?
Yeah, there's some modern things that I'm very fond of.
I like indoor plumbing.
I do, too.
Yes, and there's certain things I really do, cleanliness, things like that, you know, showers. And I guess that's...
Showers are pretty great. There's nothing like showering after being camping or something for a week.
Yes.
And, you know, like imagine if that was your life all the time. No shower existed.
Uh-uh.
You could go dump in the ocean and get, you know, use sand to clean your hair. That sounds cool.
So now that anyway, you know, we certainly are taking a circuitous route to everything tonight. But that's, I think, how we're feeling tonight.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, one of her favorite instruments is the sistrum.
Yeah, the sistrum is a popular Egyptian instrument. There's a few goddesses who dig the sistrum.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's, let's see, if you don't know what a sistrum is, it's like a stick with a U shape, kind of like Hathor's horn.
Yes.
And between the U's, like from one arm or leg or whatever, of the U to the other, there's a string.
Right.
Or like a metal
wire
string.
Yeah.
And then on the string are little, like, tambourine doodads.
Mm-hmm.
So you shake it and it makes like a tambourine noise, sort
right.
of.
It's but a rat, like
louder.
A rattle, which
yeah.
eventually gourds were, you know, again, the gourds. And it was a way to dispel evil spirit.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's not just a way to make music, but, you know, in the time of what these instruments were utilized in worship,
right,
it was a way to cleanse the environment.
And the Egyptians, especially the priests and priestesses of Hathor,
mm-hmm.
were big on processions.
Mm-hmm.
Processions were a big thing. And I must say, I think there is a huge lack
of processions
in modern paganism. We need more the sessions, but they would, because Hathor has this sexy energy and it's about enjoying life and being lustful and celebratory, that these processions would happen and there would be music and there would be drinking and frivolity.
Right.
And would move from temple to temple or on days where there was specific worship or celebration. A lot of the processions included
the dance
music
and the music and very, very sensual. And again, I think you look at it, this is where belly dancing.
Right.
You know, it may not have been exactly that, but, you know, the movement of the hips and the suggestive
There's
quality.
There's a whole tradition of Egyptian belly dancing that comes from these ancient civilizations. Absolutely.
And, you know, I mean, we've got, so I guess I'm going to ask you, since you've done at least some of the work here on having presented before with her, how, what was her lineage? Where did she come from? Meaning mom and dad.
Oh, mom and dad. Mom, I don't know. I can't remember. But I know she, I'm going to scan my notes really quick. But I know that she is connected to Ra quite a bit. And in some stories, Ra is her father. In some stories, Ra is her brother. In some stories, Ra is her lover. And that's not unusual in Egyptian mythology.
Right.
That the deities have relationships that are multi-layered. It's also in Egyptian life, especially for the ruling class, siblings would marry each other because they wanted to keep the bloodlines pure.
Pure. Unfortunately, that also meant they kept the, they didn't know genetics, so the inbreeding of kind of...
Yeah, well, you see that all over the world too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a good idea.
No.
But I think she was the daughter of Nut, Newt. I like Nut better, but...
Nut, Newt, Newt, whatever, Newt.
But then again, yes, he's, you know, she's kind of got, what do we call it? She's, it's interesting because they cross her over with Isis, too.
Right, right. And there, oddly, there's some crossover with Sekhmet.
Yes.
Who's a lion-headed goddess and has a very different energetic. So, you know, again, we do this crossover of...
Well, they say in her destroyer aspect, basically, she was a lion and the headed huntress, the Sphinx.
Right.
So you could see where that throws it into the Sekhmet point of reference.
Sure. And see, how I was taught was Sekhmet and Bastet were two sides of the same coin.
Exactly.
But then again, if we look at the Egyptian gods as layers of each other, sort of like the Hindu gods are, you could see that this one emanation of, let's say, Isis, because Isis is sort of the bigwig Egyptian pantheon, right? So Isis in this guise is Hathor, and Isis in this guise is Sekhmet, and Isis in this guise is...
Right.
Right? So then you could see how Hathor and Sekhmet, or Hathor and Heshet, or whatever, like, you can see the how that would make sense. It's more like a puzzle than a linear, like you're saying.
Yeah, and it's actually, that brings to mind, it's like going, we have one big source.
Yeah.
Okay, and we're going to call it Isis, and we're going to call it Ra.
Yeah.
And then you go from that, and you kind of, the things that come down are the, as you say, the different aspects that they come into the physical, more physical realm. They take on the sensual area, so, you know, we throw that into Hathor. We take on the warrior's, you know, the rage, Sekhmet.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of a thing. As the female, and then the same thing, of course, you go on the other side with the male energy of the male deities. But it's kind of like, just like a puzzle where you kind of put the little pieces together, but there's one big thing.
Right.
So... we're trying to do this in a more linear way to give you ideas, but it does kind of flow around.
Well, there's a fun story that I thought maybe before we take a break.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of stories that feature Hathor, and a lot of them involve Ra. And this story, I honestly don't know how valid this story is.
Okay.
There is some interesting crossover between this story and a Japanese story about Amaterasu.
It's
story.
Yes.
So apparently there is a god named Baba, who's a baboon god. And when the choices came between Set or Ra to sort of be the head dude, Baba decided to be on Set's team. And so he taunted Set and was like, there's no one on the throne and you suck and blah, blah, blah. And so Ra, of course, was pissed because I don't know if you've heard stories about Ra. He gets pissed a lot.
Yeah.
And he's kind of a pouty god. Those, like, sun gods can be very pouty.
I know.
So he storms off. And, of course, what happens when the sun god storms off? The sun goes away.
Right.
Life falls apart and we don't have food and we can't
be where the hell we're going or any of it.
Problems. And so then the other gods are like, oh, shit, we better do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
And Baba is sent away, but Ra still is pouting because sun god. And so Hathor decides that she will take it upon herself to lure him out of his sadness.
Mm-hmm.
And she does a strip tease for him.
Ooh.
And she does a body dance where she plays with her body parts and flashes him and shows him what's going on between her legs, and she gets all lewd and naked, and he laughs and realizes he's being a big baby and decides to come out and again rejoins the gods, and the sun returns, and hooray, we're not going to die.
Good.
But I like this because, you know, again, this is a society where women being in their bodies
mm-hmm.
would not have been problematic,
mm-hmm.
right? Like
mm-hmm.
it is now.
Yeah. And that's a great line to go to our short but sweet break.
Let me click on the button. We'll be right back.
Yes.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC. Radio Network. Stay tuned as more magic is coming your way right after these messages. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie, Sundays 3 to 4:30. The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6. Fit and Foxy, Madame Nadia and Jaya Danya, Wednesdays 6 to 7. And The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Fridays 6 to 7. All times Pacific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
As always, we're back after such a wonderful little interlude of finding out who our compadres are in Radioland.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so. Well, one of the things I had mentioned very quickly at break is the fact that as well as being the goddess of pleasure among things, and she was of the toiletry and makeup and cosmetics and, you know, all the things that go into the beautification aspect is
yeah.
that it was another object of hers was the mirror.
Right.
Fashioned from the Ankh
mm-hmm.
and then using the bronze part, of course, inside the Ankh
right.
loop.
And you can find mirrors like this commercially made now. If
mm-hmm.
you decide, you know, you dig Hathor and you want to explore a deeper relationship with this deity,
mm-hmm.
you can easily find an Ankh-shaped bronze mirror to work
mm-hmm.
with. It's really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say here you see some interesting crossover with the Nigerian or Yoruban goddess Oshun,
right.
who is also a goddess of beauty and pleasure and carries a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're both from Africa. You got to love it.
Yes, we do.
I mean, hundreds of miles away from each other, but still. Still, it's, you know, something to pay attention
yes,
to.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And, well, and it's interesting because both being the underworld, the above the sky world, is that the Milky Way was to be given creation by her as the milk of life.
Right.
From her teeth.
Right. And there is an older version of Hathor called Hesat,
mm-hmm.
who was also a cow goddess, a dairy cow goddess,
mm-hmm.
and her milk was said to be the beer of Hesat. And this is not the only tradition, ancient civilization, where an animal you can milk with beer. In I can't remember the name of the goat, but there's a goat in Norse mythology that belongs to Thor,
mm-hmm.
that mead comes out of its teeth.
Ah.
This is something that you see over and over
mm-hmm.
again in different
mm-hmm.
mythologies, milk or beer or mead or wine in
right.
Greek traditions
right.
come out of a goat or a cow.
That's fascinating.
Because water wasn't safe, right? So
there you are.
The reason people drank beer and wine for so long and didn't drink water is because water makes you sick. It has to be cleaned.
And by doing the process of what they do in making beer
fermenting,
and wine, and
yep.
it ferments it,
right.
it cleans it out. So obviously
yeah.
that is...
Sure, I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again. There is a television show. It's a British show. You can find it on Hulu if you have access to Hulu. It's called Supersizers Go, and it's a food critic from the UK
mm-hmm.
and a female comedian from the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And they each episode, they go to a different time period
mm-hmm.
and they dress the way they dressed and
mm-hmm.
eat the way that they would have eaten, including ancient recipes for a whole week. And some,
oh my gosh,
some weeks they're drunk the whole time. Some weeks they're sick because they can't actually physically eat the food because it's so gross and
right.
foreign, right?
Right.
And I don't mean foreign things are gross. I just mean, when your palate is used to French fries and someone puts something else in front of you,
mm-hmm.
it's hard, you know?
Yeah, the system goes, eh.
If you find anything historical interesting in any way, shape, or form, this show is great and it's
mm-hmm.
funny.
Mm-hmm.
And they do an Egyptian episode.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, see, there we go. And yet we thought television was just for strange and wonderful things.
It is strange, but it's still...
But, you know, it's got an educational part of it as opposed to
yeah.
telling us the bad news and, you know, stupid laugh joke kind of...
Right.
You know.
Yeah, it's quite good.
Yeah.
Highly recommend.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we do normally tell is, you know, when the festivals are.
Yeah.
And the one that I actually have that is her birthday now, you may know or not, it being in Dendera, was September 17th. That's, of course, by our calendar.
Right.
All right.
Right.
But
they did not use our calendar.
No.
One. They had
no.
a different calendar.
But, you know, and it's, you know, the... There was, again, a whole procession and drinking and dancing, obviously. And then, let's see what else. Well, that's pretty much it. An August 7th one where the goddess is turned away from destroying humankind, which is, again, beer and ale was used to do that, which is her dark side and,
yep.
you know, the feast there.
I have this hymn.
Oh, good, good, good. We always need hymns.
Yeah, a hymn to Hathor. So the reason hymn is here is because it's connected to Turquoise musical necklace.
Ooh,
which I don't quite know all about, but it sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the necklace is called Menat.
Ah.
And it's something. Anyway, but here's the hymn. Thou art the mistress of jubilation, the queen of the dance, the mistress of music, the queen of harp playing, the lady of the choral dance, the queen of wreath weaving, and the mistress of inebriety without end.
Ooh.
Drunkenness without end.
Without end.
I love it. But
yes.
It says, it goes on to say, you know, that she has this multifaceted role of wife and mother
mm-hmm.
and lover and,
mm-hmm.
and you know, these different layers, and she becomes the lady of the house of jubilation, one who
right.
fills the sanctuary with joy because she holds all these different titles of
uh-huh.
of what you could represent in ancient Egyptian culture.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this specific source of mine points out that it would have been rare, especially for a goddess, to have male and female priests. And she did. She
right.
had male and female priests, which would have been unusual. And supposedly there is some amount of sacred prostitution attached to Hathor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know all of the details about that or how much validity is there. We can look. That's another one of those things where we have to look at it and be like, well, what does prostitution mean to this culture?
Mm-hmm.
It might not have been what we attach to that word.
Right.
So I always want to caution people with things like that. Sacred sexuality now may be very different from what sacred sexuality was thousands of years
yeah,
ago on the other side of the planet.
Right, right. So, because we're trying to take information that is gathered from various sources and various time frames to try and give a better understanding, but you have to really look at what it is that is meant.
Yeah.
From one long ago culture to and time frame to now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but I know that, you know, the things that she had were she was addressed as, you know, she had many epithets. She, you know, we could name them and name them and name them.
Right.
But it was always about the beauty.
Right.
You know, golden one or the, you know, whatever they had with whatever they called her. And the other side, you know, what do we say? You know, no, what is it? Oh, God. Now I've got to remember. Here we go. Goddess, I'm sorry. Is what, you know, rage has no, wrath has no scorn. Scorn has no wrath other than a woman scorned,
or
something of that nature.
Yes.
And you think about it, the other side of the beauty is the scorn and the rage.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
And whatever gets you, you know, ticked off to the max.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we have, you know, different people with correspondences. I love the, you know, you find the different things. What are the correspondences? So, if, you know, if you're looking at the Tarot, the Empress, okay, and gems are emerald and turquoise, and plants, you know, are roses and myrtle and clove.
Yep.
And perfumes are rose and red and sandalwood. Oh, there is the sycamore tree story.
Yeah.
Yes, speaking of that.
I was just looking for that. Do you have that easily?
Readily available. Good point. As we go through our myriad of notes, this woman was, you know, we took a lot of notes with this.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, she's called the Lady of the Sycamore. Dual aspect, benign celestial cow nourishes the gods, protects and patronizes the art of astrology and creative comfort of life, called the Lady of Sycamore, preside over the other aspects of women's beauty.
Mm.
And I don't have anything more other than that, but I know that the sycamore was very important to her. And I can't answer why.
Well, that's fine.
But if it's something that interests you, delve further.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes, and she, and I think it's interesting that, you know, we're talking about the great spiritual love, not just the sexual love.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, and again, I think we said this already, but a lot of her stories are wrapped up with Ra, and different arguments that they get into, different fights that they get into, and one or both of them go off in a huff, and so of course their life force is withdrawn from the earth and the people are sad, and then some other entity or deity has to intercede to cool them down or bring them back.
Right.
And there are stories after stories. They're kind of like a terrible on again, off again relationship.
Well, we know all
of maybe.
Yeah.
A little trouble.
Yeah. Well, I do have actually about, it says the sycamore tree, Hathor was honored. It was the great sycamore's tree that stood south side of the temple of Ptah in the Old Kingdom. And in the underworld, she is the tree that the souls sit under, and the souls are received and nourished by this tree. And they were buried in, you know, obviously in Egypt they were mummified, but there was a burying in a wooden coffin was the womb of the goddess.
Yeah, okay.
So that was all that I did find more on it, but
nice.
You know, it gives you the idea of information. And, you know, she has the sweet Hathor, queen of beauty, protector of the weak, shield as against the enemies of light, adorn us in the raiment of truth and nourish and support us when our strength fades or fails. Guide us in the interpretation of the heavenly signs and assist us in the daily nature of our earthly lives.
Mm.
A quote from a hymn.
Nice.
Yeah.
Then another thing I find really interesting about Egyptian, something. I don't know what the word is, John.
Whoopsie.
But the pharaohs, the ruling classes, would often identify with a specific god, or they would, they were born of that god. They were, you know, the divine human emanation of that god.
Right.
And one of the humans that is connected to Hathor is Nefertari. Nefertari is depicted as Hathor in many places, and her husband, who is Ramses II, is also shown in some of the iconography around his burial place as drinking milk from Hathor the cow. And
right.
There is this other world connection, because the whole thing about Egyptian and death and the other world is so complicated. It's not as easy as you might think. Oh, they mummified them so that they could, and they gave them, you know, food and goats and concubines so that they would have them on the other side. That's not exactly right. Like, there was a whole other world, but you had to go through a series of obstacles to make it to the other world. So we have this Book of the Dead, you know, the Egyptian Book of the Dead that people have heard of, and I think there's also a book called the Egyptian Book of Day and Night. Is that right? Okay. But these books were specific people who had died guides to get them through the obstacle course, right? And some of them, it's like a map. They needed that map to make it through, because there were all kinds of perils.
Right.
Demons, rooms full of creatures that will eat you, places where your worthiness will be judged, and so you're armed with food to help you get through it, and gold or what have you to help you pay off some people if you need to pay off some people. But it wasn't just like, oh no, I'm in the other world, I'm in the afterworld, I'm in heaven or whatever. No, even if you were a good person, you still had to make it.
That journey, which is interesting, because there are other cultures that have the Book of the Dead for their culture. I know the Hindu tradition has it. I know that, you know, even in the Christian philosophies, there's, you know, prayers and things that are said to help the soul.
Right. Well, there's the Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Tibetan Book of the Dead, right. And I think they even now have, I don't know if this is, I'm concluding that the Celtic Book of the Dead and the Living and the Dead, there's a point there. But it's fascinating that you see how the journey is.
Yeah.
That once the energy, the soul, leaves the body to go to the afterlife, that there is, you know, things they have to go through.
Right. Yeah.
You know, weighing of the soul, you know, the judgment, you name it, they've got a way to describe it. But it actually is true. It's like, well, you know, even the people that have done it in a little bit more spiritual light tradition is that you basically have places you go to review.
Yeah, right.
You know, to, like, decompress, and what is it? This is my day. It's been occasionally finding the word and losing it again. But it's using the idea that you go back and you debrief.
Yeah.
You debrief, you go over what's happened. And,
right.
You know, the things that went good and didn't go good.
Yeah.
So I think that's really how we do it, and whether we do it in clothes of demons and all kinds of stuff, or sitting in a chair talking to someone else and sharing a
Peter at the gate.
Yeah. A little cup of something.
Yeah.
But I think that's, again, we're looking at it. We're looking at how we can see the unity, as well as what is important. If this is a goddess that really sparks you, and there's more to just it than the sexuality, which is not to say that's not important, but there's a whole energy here.
Right. Yeah. And it's ancient and it's vast. You know, there's a Milky Way connection, and you know, there is a reason it's called the Milky Way. And if you live anywhere that isn't completely rural, you don't see it.
Right.
But if you have an opportunity to go someplace that's out there, you can see our sky is filled with milk. It's pretty freaking amazing.
It really is. It
but
is gorgeous.
But for this goddess, you know, set an altar for her. That's the best way to start a relationship with any deity.
Uh-huh.
Set an altar, put out some milk, burn a candle. If you can find an image or a statue, just open yourself up that you want to commune, you want to connect, you want to meet her on a deeper level than just intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they show up.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And we're almost out of time.
Yeah.
I know it comes so fast.
Yeah.
Next week is Shiva, I believe. We're actually kind of going to the God side.
Right, next week. And Hindu, which is, I'm feeling nervous because it's so complicated.
That's I know.
Fine.
We will find a way to navigate.
Yeah, just be prepared.
Oh, well. And if we sound like we wander through it, join us in our wandering. We're really fun.
Yeah, it'll be good.
All right. Well, until next week.
Yep.
We have a few more minutes. I can't tell if that clock's, you know, right or not.
Oh, that's a little slow.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, but it's been a gas being back on the live air.
Yeah.
You know, and finding ourselves talking and then suddenly losing a mind of
right.
information and going, where did we put it? But
we'll get it back.
We will get it back, yes. Well, between Valentine's Day and St. Patty's Day, we better get it back, you know, because I want to party on St. Patty's Day, even if, you know, that whole thing is another made-up process.
Oh, I know. Don't get me started.
Well, we could. We'll do it next week.
Anyway.
Or the week after.
All right.
All right, my dears.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.